Hi there, and welcome to The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping you find your true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only you can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind. The voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me as we have a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice.
Hello?
I'm here.
Just Like Heaven, one of my favorite songs of all time, and today we're fortunate to have with us Shia and Ariel Kane, who are all about instantaneous transformation, which when I read the book and paid attention to what they were talking about, it's an idea that made a lot of sense to me and something that I've been trying to incorporate in my own life as well, although at some points it does seem just like heaven because it does seem a little harder than that. So we're going to get a chance to talk to them and find out exactly what it is, and please feel free at any point to call in and talk to us. We'll be here for the entire hour. Shia, are you there?
I am.
And I am too. Hi, Rusty.
Hi, Ariel. Thank you so much. I know you were trying to get something else accomplished there, so I appreciate you jumping in with us. How are y'all doing?
We are excellent, and we're honored to be on your show.
Thank you very much. They tried to have these guys on before, and our computer system didn't allow it. So I really appreciate it. And they're also on the East Coast, which means it's 11 o'clock their time, and I know how busy they are. And as I said, if you feel like calling in, 888-228-4494 in the U.S. and Canada, toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. I read the book. I love the book. I've read it a couple of times, different sections. I kind of try and stay away from the stories of individual clients and just read the stuff in between. Instantaneous transformation. I love the idea, and I believe in exactly what you guys are talking about. And at the same time, there seems to be a sense that it's effortless. And my experience has been that I still kind of have to try to remind myself to be present moment and to kind of relearn some of that. I don't know how to explain it, but I think my old thought patterns tend to sneak in there at some point, and they tend to kind of creep up on me a little bit. So can you guys just talk a little bit about instant transformation? And I know you guys kind of came up with it together and you talk worldwide about it, but can you tell us a little bit more about the idea?
We'll talk about the idea in a moment, but I have to say something. Remember when you first learned to ride a bike?
Probably if I thought about it for a minute, I could remember that.
When I first rode a bike, I had training wheels. I mean, I couldn't stay upright.
Right.
But now it's effortless. I mean, I don't ride often now, but if I even try it, it's effortless.
Right.
So at first, when you're learning this skill set of instantaneous transformation and living in the moment, our minds are so busy and we're so pre-programmed that you have to effort, you expect it, and if you don't have effort, you somehow think you're not doing it right.
Well, not only that, Rusty, you know, you're used to using your mind. In fact, it talks to you all the time.
Constantly.
Constantly. And see, we've been trained to use our minds. That's why humanity has survived as well as it has. But we have other facilities available to us, not just our thought.
Hi, my name is Rusty May, and I'm the host of The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping people find their true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only they can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind, the voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me each week for a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice. I'll see you on Sunday.
I can hear you perfectly. Sorry, Don. I know this is confusing, but I was just saying it was weird. You know, it's the second time I've had you guys on, the second time we've had technical difficulties, but obviously...
You know, when you reach this psychic vibration level, you fry computers and things.
It must be too high. It must be high.
That's the myth, at least.
Well,
we're not sure where we left yet.
You were talking to me and telling me a little bit about, you know, the idea of trying to incorporate these skills and that we think all the time. I think, Shia, you were talking about how we have to kind of relearn some of that.
Well, actually, the truth is that we already know everything there is to know in us, but over top of that is our enculturation. We've been raised in a culture where people are constantly lost trying to get somewhere or work on what went wrong in their past from their point of view.
Right.
And so they're very, very rarely in the current moment of now. The other thing is, Rusty, that most of us think we are the voice we listen to. That conversation that we have that says, oh, I don't understand what they're talking about, or can't they make this easier, or what do you mean this is a skill set that you can learn?
I guess why I use the analogy of a bicycle is I imagine a lot of people who listen to your show have ridden bikes in their lives one time or another, and I feel that virtually any skill set at first is just seems mystifying. Today I went to a digital camera course, and there were pieces of it I already knew, and then that was effortless and easy. And the new things, as I was trying to assimilate the language that was English but being used in a different way, a way I'd not heard before, it seemed challenging. But interestingly enough, I went yesterday as well, and some of the 2 days, because they were two separate courses, overlapped a little bit. And what I found was the things they talked about yesterday that were mysterious to me by today were already useful. So in a certain respect, when you're learning the skill set of instantaneous transformation, the ability to be in the moment, you need to relax a little bit because it sinks in. You don't have to think about it so hard, which is really challenging for you if you're so intelligent.
Well, I think, you know, but that's part of the instantaneous transformation piece, is that I think it does continue to require not an effort is the wrong word, but I know a strength in the observer is something that I got when I was reading your book. I was like, you know, you need to have that observer self. You need to have that observer self and to see yourself and completion is an idea that I absolutely love. I love the idea of seeing yourself and allowing, you know, habits and things to complete as opposed to trying to, you know, to wish them or to work them out of existence. Which seems to create a fight from those particular issues. And so the idea to me is just like, you know, there's still a sense of trying to, there is still a sense of trying. And I know letting go and relaxing is something that, one of the reasons I do this show is to talk to people like you. So that, you know, I do this completely for myself because it helps me in terms of trying to deal with the issues that I'm dealing with. But, you know.
Okay, good. Rusty, let me see if I can give you a leg up on this thing called instantaneous transformation. It all starts with listening. Now, it may not seem that important, but listening is key. See, most of us aren't where we are. We're ahead of ourselves or working on the past. Now, listening, if you actually listen to hear what another person says, to hear what they're saying from their point of view, it will pull you into the current moment of now.
Right.
There's a
whole section.
Exactly
right, and I agree with you 100%. I think one of the problems that a lot of us face is the idea of goal setting, and Shia, I appreciated your talking about how many different methods that you had tried and different ways of trying to accomplish some sense of a present moment awareness, and I put myself in that category at some level where I tried the goal setting and I would go out there and I would always be focused on the future and what I wanted to accomplish and those kinds of things, and it did take me out of the journey. It took me out of the opportunity to be present. And one of the things that I appreciate about counseling when I work with clients is when I actually stop and listen to them, it kind of it relieves all the pressure. It takes all the pressure off of me.
Good. Well, you know, listening does a lot of things, but the primary thing, most of us listen to see whether we already know what's being said or to see whether we agree or disagree with what's being said.
All judging.
Or to find fault with the way the person's expressing themselves or
right.
to see if there's an agenda that's going to be fulfilled by what's being said. The thing is this, listening to hear what another person is saying from their point of view will pull you into the moment. And that's where transformation happens, not in your thinking about it. I mean, Ariel and I spent years and years taking workshops and courses thinking about making our lives better.
Right.
And now they work to some degree. But it was minimal. It was when, after having lived in a meditation center for a couple of years, taking courses that were 6 months long, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that we realized that working on yourself doesn't work. Because if you're working on yourself, you're saying there's something wrong with you.
Right.
And we've grown up in a psychological society where everybody's looking for a worse something wrong with them to make it's a better story.
Right.
You know, if your parents didn't abuse you, you don't have a very valuable story. If you grew up in a place where you had a cat and a dog and two parents and they were happy and it was a nice family, that's a very disinteresting story. But if you were abused, now that's a good story.
it gives us a reason not to move, you know, or not to be aware, you know. And I think one of the things that I like, you know, I know I was talking to my nephew today. We went to his basketball game. He's a seventh grader. And he talked about, you know, where he wanted to be or, where, you know, what he wanted to do in the future or how many points he wanted to score, those kinds of stuff, as opposed to focusing on the game itself and just being very present and aware of what was going on around him. And that's what I think is so beautiful about the idea is that you're talking about really enjoying the process and including yourself as a work in process, as opposed to I need to fix this and then I'll be happy, or I need to have this and then I'll be satisfied. You see yourself as a work in process, and you're able to enjoy the journey, which is ultimately what it's all about.
Well, I can't really say that Shai or I see ourselves as a work in process. Processes change. Transformation is instantaneous, but the weird paradox is it's also cumulative. So the more you're here, the more you're able to have strength in that. I'll give you another example. Shai and I go to a Pilates class. And when we first went to work with a trainer, they started focusing on our core muscles, which are basically the muscles that run up inside your belly, as a core or the basis which all of their exercises flow out of. And each Shai and I each had different muscle groups that were much stronger than others, and the core muscles weren't among them. And each day that we went to class, we did the exercises to the best of our ability, and that class was complete in and of itself, and I felt like a hero or a star or excellent for investing in myself, but it wasn't like my body was a work in progress. However, 5 years later, my core muscles are significantly stronger than they were when they started. One comes from that there's something wrong that you're working on to make better, which is, in fact, an endless cycle of pain. And the other is about the perfection of this moment. In fact, if you look in the dictionary, it says the moment is perfect.
Because it's immutable and it can't be changed. And it's exactly the way it is. And it lacks nothing. See, most of us don't realize that our lives are an unfolding of moments of now, and each moment is perfect, and that means that we're perfect in our lives in this moment. Doesn't mean that we haven't set up things in our lives that are causing us conflict and pain out of what we've done in our past. They call that karma.
And I'm not surprised your seventh grader nephew was off dreaming about points he's going to produce. Not only has he been part of the culture that is goal setting, but kids at that age, they have this incredible imagination and this enthusiasm for possibility that goes dead in most of us as we get older. So it's kind of a mixed bag wherever you're at.
Well, where does learning come into this? I mean, can you talk a little bit about learning?
What about learning?
Well, I mean, I mean, I'm almost thinking as if there's, you know, we're perfect in the moment, and at the same time, there are, you know, there's the whole idea in education, which I'm a school counselor during the day, and it's the idea of the tabula rasa, which is the blank slate, as opposed to the child that comes fully formed, and it's just a gift that needs to be unwrapped, as opposed to, you know, something that we need to kind of, In education, just allowed to learn it, but does that make sense? I'm asking about learning from the perspective of being able to get into that moment, because there does seem to be, you're speaking about Pilates as if those core skills, they did get stronger over a period of time. I don't know, and again, I plead ignorance, and I appreciate you guys staying with me on this, but I'm trying to integrate learning into that process. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Okay, Rusty, there's this idea that if you get enlightened, you know, you get self-realized, you'll become a couch potato, that you won't get involved in anything. To the contrary and to the opposite of that, When you start to discover how to live your life directly rather than think about what to do with your life, you are engaging in your life with totality and enthusiasm and passion. And that happens not out of trying to get somewhere. It's like you live in California. Whereabouts in California?
No, Northern California, Chico.
Northern California. Well, then do you ski or...
I do.
You do? Good. Skiing. I like skiing. Not that I ski, but... And we got stories about me attempting it in Switzerland about 20 years ago. But skiing is a really good example, because as you get better at skiing, you don't think about how to do it, do you?
No.
No, it becomes this natural expression of yourself. You don't work at it. Now, initially you worked at it. You had to get your body and you had to get yourself present. You can't be daydreaming when you're skiing, can you?
Well, no, especially if you're a Kennedy, because it'll cost you your life. So, no, you need to definitely pay attention. Or Sonny Bono, I guess. That was somebody who was daydreaming.
Yeah,
it's okay. But, if you're not being where you are when you're skiing, you get hurt, you fall down.
Right.
You know, when Shia first learned to ski, his one and only time, he got up there and did that snow plow down the bunny hill, and he was skiing, and he did it perfectly, and he was perfectly skiing. But the muscles and the unfamiliarity of standing in a way that was totally unfamiliar to him, it was like, as I convinced him that he should go up with me on a little more difficult, not because...
Adventurous slope.
Because I absolutely underestimated my skills, I didn't realize that partway down the hill that he would not be able to hold that form anymore, and his feet would come apart. And you know, when your skis are parallel and you're facing downhill, there's a really good likelihood you're going to shoot down the hill, and unless you sit down, you will
go off the cliff. Because in Switzerland they have things like that.
Yeah, like bare patches and cliffs and things like that. So I guarantee you that there are times already where this instantaneous transformation has happened, but that you're not enough familiar with the skill set that from time to time your skis go in parallel when you're heading downhill.
So you're continuing, I mean, basically, if I'm hearing you correctly, that what I'm hearing is that when you're skiing with, you know, in the pizza style down the hill, that in that moment you're doing just fine with what you have. I mean, you're in the moment, you're a skier at that level, and as you continue on in that process, that those the muscle memory and the opportunity to take instantaneous transformation into your life will allow you to ski with your skis parallel and learn how to stop and do those kinds of things. But it's not a matter of actually doing anything. It's just a matter of trusting the fact that it's in fact happening.
You're getting closer now. It's about it's about awareness. You see, awareness is key. As you become aware of the things you do and don't do, then that awareness allows you to avoid all those mechanical predispositions that get you in trouble. Let's look at it this way. If we had a large room that had no windows, so no light could get in, and it had conference tables and chairs and people in the room, and we turned out the lights and asked you to walk across the room, you'd bump into things, yeah?
Right.
But if we turn on the light, then you can avoid all the obstacles just by seeing them there. Most of us are so preoccupied with our thoughts that we miss opportunities that are happening all around us because we're not aware of them. See, our definition of awareness is a non-judgmental seeing of anything. So if you see that you are doing something that's not in your best interest, most of us call ourselves bad names when we see that.
Sometimes in the range of dummy, sometimes more with expletives thrown in.
But you know, that perpetuates it. Well, there are three ideas, three principles. The first one is anything you resist persists, grows stronger, and dominates your life.
Absolutely.
The second idea is you can only be exactly as you are in this moment of now.
I'm sitting in my chair.
And you couldn't be standing in this moment, could you?
No, and I read that in the book.
Right, very good. Now,
yes, Working on Yourself Doesn't Work has got lots of great things in it. I just had to say that. Go ahead.
Yes. And so in this moment, I could only be standing because I'm standing. You could only be sitting because you're sitting. And we can only be having the thoughts we're having, the body sensations, the feelings, all of it. But if that's true and our lives can't be different than they are in each moment of our life, because they can't, it's amazing how much we complain to ourselves about our lives.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that is one of the things that is so... and I will ask you this question. Consciousness, is it evolving, or are we just learning how to use it?
Well, I don't know. You see, that's a strange question, but I would say we're just learning how to use it. Because
okay.
I've been around for almost 68 years now. Another
month
or so.
You look great on the website, by the way.
That's current picture, too, by the way.
Very positive.
Within the last 6 months, yes, in case your viewers are wondering, our website is transformationmadeeasy.com, and you should look at Shai. Shai is a living testament to what being present is, and I'm 50, by the way.
And
so you'll see it
growth up there. As well.
Well, thank you.
And you know, like, if as you say, are we evolving? I'd say yes, because you see, it took me about 25 or 30 years of hard work to discover that I didn't need to work on myself. And people these days, in our workshops and seminars and by reading our books and listening to our radio show, they are discovering transformation in their lives without efforting or struggling to get somewhere. And here's the other thing about transformation, Rusty. Most of us become aware of transformation in retrospect, where we stop behaving a certain way and we realize that we stopped without even trying to stop. You know, there was a time when you may have been trying to change something about you, and then one day it's no longer there and you didn't do anything to get rid of it. That's transformation.
I have an incredible story. I've been teaching anger management and domestic violence classes for guys coming out of prison for the last 3 years, and I was at a Benihana's recently, and the
yes.
chef was just having a terrible day, and he was flipping stuff to me, and the whole restaurant was watching, and he threw the rice at me, and it landed in my lap, and all of a sudden I was laughing my way through the whole dinner, and the guy sitting next to me kind of nudges me, and he goes, "How'd you do that?" And I said, "Well, you know, this has always been an issue for me. And I've been teaching these classes, and it became really apparent to me that one of my triggers used to be embarrassment. And I was sitting there, and I had that exact experience that I think you're talking about, which was, I wasn't angry. I wasn't embarrassed, and it wasn't like I'd done anything. It was just all of a sudden that the things that used to bother me no longer did. And I was amazed
example.
By it, and so was the person sitting next to me.
Yeah.
Perfect example.
How long ago was that?
2 weeks ago. The guy actually got my card. He wants me to help him out. He wants me to do some counseling with him because he's got an anger management problem.
I was hoping that it's after you read our book.
Yes, it was after I read your book. Absolutely.
Well, that's,
you know,
that's the kind of thing I'm
years.
Talking about.
No, exactly. You guys, please don't get me wrong. I loved your book, and I think the world of what you guys are doing. I believe in that accomplishment, and maybe that was an opportunity where all of a sudden it was like, wow, it just kind of disappeared for me. You know, it just kind of went away in that particular situation. Although I did come home the other night, my dog and I were, my best friend in the world, were having a bad day, and I did get angry at him. So it's kind of, you know, one step forward, two steps back, but I'll take what I can get.
Maybe two steps forward and one step back. Here's the thing. Working on our book, Working on Yourself, Doesn't Work, the three simple ideas that will instantaneously transform your life is much more than three simple ideas. It's literally a text for how to get control of your life, how you can get control of your life so you don't get angry, so you actually can start to dissolve those mechanical knee-jerk reactions that we all have had. I really like your example, though, Rusty, of, you know, this guy is what would have gotten you very upset not very long ago, and it just was what was so, and it didn't get you upset.
You know,
that's great.
I didn't even realize it until the next day. I'm sorry to cut you off there, Ariel, but I didn't even realize it until the next day when I was driving down to San Francisco that probably would have really angered me in the past. So it wasn't even that in the moment that I realized it. It wasn't even until the next day that I was thinking, you know, embarrassment has always been one of my triggers, and that's kind of, it didn't trigger me.
That is more exactly what we are talking about. That is more evidence of instantaneous transformation, Rusty, because there's two components to it. The first component is this. You're not sitting there noticing this man be angry and talking to yourself saying, don't get mad, don't get mad. It doesn't even occur to you to get angry, and it doesn't occur to you to be embarrassed, and you don't even notice it in the moment. You're not talking to yourself about it because you're just there, and later you realize something is shifting.
Hey, this used to drive me crazy.
Right.
You know, Shai was talking about listening. Did we talk about the third principle
yet? No, that's
where
I was going.
We got to do that because I wanted to go back to listening because it's such a perfect example.
The third idea or principle is that anything you see and allow to be exactly as it is completes itself. And this applies directly to Benihana's. So you see the chef and he's throwing rice at you and you're not even getting married.
Great.
And you see it, and that's all it takes for it to complete itself right there. So there is no reaction. You just saw it, and your simple awareness of it was enough for it to complete itself. Now, you see it the next day, you say, hey, man, how come I didn't get angry last night? Well, maybe just being there was enough to complete the whole thing.
I think one of the biggest challenges and one of the things that has a tendency to reconstitute those, quote, bad habits is that everything needs energy to survive. So obviously, if you'd gotten angry at some point there and you were saying to yourself, oh, man, I shouldn't be doing that, that's a form of resistance. What you resist persists, grows stronger, and continues. But what we've discovered is if, and there's this example is in Working on Yourself Doesn't Work also, it's almost as if you've hung a penny on a string. And heads is when you are saying something nice to yourself, and tails is when you're saying something not so nice to yourself. You spin it around. We like it when it's saying the nice stuff. And if you start saying, wow, look at me, didn't I do great? I didn't get angry. You actually add energy back to that thing that just finished. You reconstitute it from nothing. I'm not saying that you did that, but it just occurred to me that congratulating oneself for getting rid of something has a tendency to bring it back.
I understand what you're saying. I got a question for you. I just watched a video on Tibet, and it was a documentary about the Dalai Lama and what's happened with China over the past 50 or so years. And you mentioned on your website, and one of the questions to ask you guys in a radio interview was, the difference between enlightenment is a lofty goal that requires work and discipline. These people spend their entire lives meditating and doing sand paintings and really being they practice on a regular basis. And
yes,
they speak to enlightenment as being a practice. And I wonder, I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Okay, I'll give you my thoughts on it. About 22 years ago, Ariel and I were living in San Francisco. We had spent the better part of 2 years before that living at a meditation center in Italy, northern Italy, and we had moved to San Francisco, and we were looking at what to do with our lives. And we were at that time reading a book called The Unborn, and it was about a Zen master named Bankai who lived in the 17th century. And as we read this book, I realized that we were living our lives the way he described in the book. Now, what was interesting, and what ties this together with your Tibet thing, was Bankai sat on a hard rock for 20 years. He almost died. His butt was all bruised and bloody from sitting on this hard rock for years and years and years. And then he became enlightened. And what he realized when he became enlightened was all that sitting on the hard rock was not what produced the enlightenment.
So I absolutely admire the monks' dedication, their skill level, their passion, what they bring to the world, that this is their passion and this is how they're expressing it. And yet I find that there are people I meet in everyday life in a Western society who have these epiphanies, these transformations, that it's not only in that format.
The reason we wrote Working on Yourself Doesn't Work is that we had this experience, and people who knew us when we were striving to get better and worked on ourselves for years and years said, what do you do now? You know, you whatever you've done, tell me about it, because you really got it this time.
And the reason we republished Working on Yourself Doesn't Work when McGraw-Hill came to us and asked if they could publish our book is because we realized in the years that went from when we first published Working on Yourself Doesn't Work to now that there were so many more examples that we could put in to make it for the Western mind to be able to make it a usable text.
See, look, if I could have my life transform, Rusty, you can too. If it could work for me, if what we do, look, I was born in Far Rockaway, New York, you know, the son of a middle class family, you know, nothing special here, and that if I could discover how to live my life in such a way that every day is an expression of the magnificence of life and I feel good about myself and I'm not working on myself, then that's available to you too. And we detail the path in Working on Yourself Doesn't Work so that you too can just discover how effortless transformation is. See, it sounds difficult, but before you learned to ski, it sounded difficult. Now that you're a skier, it's easy for you.
It doesn't sound difficult, Bill, and I would compliment you guys on your ability to, I don't know how you guys do it, you must be sitting next to each other, but you guys feed off of each other perfectly in a radio interview, which it's just amazing, and obviously speaks to your professionalism.
It doesn't sound easy.
You know, I mean, I think effortless is, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that, I'm too young. Maybe this isn't my opportunity to experience this, but it does sound like it takes at least the awareness piece, at least the trying to take a step back and see yourself. Seems like it does take a daily commitment to that. But maybe like you said with the anger thing, it's just something that just falls away and you don't have to worry about it.
Well, you say daily commitment thing like a discipline. I don't know about that. I do know being interested is a good thing.
That's
right.
A good one. I like that. See, just getting interested in what presses your buttons, just getting interested, not blaming what happened on the event, but just noticing it, that's often enough for it to resolve itself if you don't judge yourself.
And I talk about that in counseling constantly because there's so many clients. One of the reasons that I don't do a lot of one-on-one is because people want to come in and they want to be a victim to their past experience. And I sometimes call it personal gravity. You know, something happens in their life experience. They get abused or their parents get divorced or somebody did something to them. And they revolve around that, and they want to come to a counselor and talk about it every week and justify it as being a reason for them to stay where they are. And it's one of the things that's very difficult in one-on-one is to really kind of sit there and be with them and at the same time kind of be going, you know, I don't know that this is very beneficial because, you know, unless, like you said, you're able to see this for what it is and allow it to complete, it seems to be the primary motivating force in your life.
Yeah, you can either have a repeat of your life, you can live your life. That's what instantaneous transformation is about, by the way. Working on yourself doesn't work is about you discovering how to have each day show up new.
Right.
So that you're not repeating the same old, every day, every week. You know, some people have the same boyfriend or girlfriend in a lot of different bodies.
They get the same... The Volcano. Did you ever see that movie?
Joe and the Volcano.
It's a Tom Hanks movie, and Meg Ryan plays the girlfriend, but she's the embodiment of the same girl over about four different relationships. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's a funny movie.
Right, exactly. You can have it with the same boss and different jobs. It's where your life keeps showing up the same. You wake up and you have the same thoughts and day in, day out. Well, with transformation, you start to think new thoughts. Ariel has one right now.
You know, I don't know if we've sent you yet, Rusty, the book, our relationship book, How to Create a Magical Relationship, that comes out formally the day after Christmas on December 26th. But
Valerie
mentioned
it to me. She said she was going to send one to me, but I haven't gotten it yet, but I look forward to it.
You know, we don't have them in yet. I got... like five copies. I'll make sure you get one because chapter 7, page 69, there is a whole chapter on how you're not the story of your life. I really know that what we have is just so revolutionary. It's so groundbreaking. And, you know, when we start our courses, Rusty, and our radio show, because we have a radio show as well, every course we do, every radio show we do, we start with listening. And why we start it with listening is this. All you need to do is be interested. If you engage your interest in what's happening rather than your conversation about what's happening, then you automatically are pulled into the moment. Life gets easy. And working on yourself doesn't work. The third and fourth page, I don't know if you get it, we talked about Cecil, who came to one of our evenings. He sat in the back. He never said anything. This is actually a guy who's a diplomat at the UN, and he was feeling really bad for 2 years because he was here.
He wasn't there when his mom died?
Yeah. His mom died.
Yeah, I read that.
And he felt bad for 2 years.
And then we were talking to somebody on a Monday night in our Monday Night Alive in New York City, and he just happened to be walking by. He saw it was happening. He came in. He sat in the back of the room, and he listened. And this fellow that we were speaking to was talking about the second principle. He wanted to understand the second principle of instantaneous transformation. And when Cecil saw that he could have only been in the United States when his mother died, without even thinking about it, he woke up the next day and the guilt and the self-accusations about not having been there for his mother, it all disappeared instantaneously without him talking himself out of it, because he couldn't talk himself out of it for the past 2 years.
You become a clear. If you read Scientology at all, they talk about that clear. You know, the ability to let go of those engrams and some of that stuff that hold you in the past. Does it ever sound like, from your perspective, that we're offering, like, you know, this instant, you know, you see these advertisements on TV, you know, lose 100 pounds in 6 minutes, you know, and is there ever a sense that it's, you know, McDonaldizing the idea of whatever the monks call long-term enlightenment. Do you ever have a sense that we're kind of cheapening the path, or I don't know if I'm saying that the right way.
Once you taste instantaneous transformation, it actually happens in that instant. For me, it became a passion and a lifestyle. So there's nothing cheap about it. I live my life. You say we must be seated next to each other. No. Most of the time, when we're speaking to you, we've been up on our feet, wandering around because we are so excited about this. We live this way. We talk this way. People laugh when they go to the restaurants with us to have a meal. We always finish each other's sentences. We are engaged in our lives. It's a passionate expression. And there's so much richness and value in that. It's like a really good meal.
You guys met each other later in life, didn't you?
What's that?
You guys met each other later in life, didn't you?
She was 23. She was 23, so that's not later in life. And I was in my early, well, let's see, if you were 23, I was 40.
Well, see, when I first met Shia, he was leading...
I was just thinking about Old Blue. That's a good story about going to...
Well, see, Shia was leading a workshop.
You guys to figure that out, but I was thinking about that.
Oh, Old Blue, yes, because I, on my second or third day with Shia, burnt my leg on Old Blue, his motorcycle, and Shia talked me through the pain, basically using these principles, until the pain disappeared. And it was my... And this was even pre...
It
was one of those jewels in time, but now those jewels are strung together like pearls, so it's like one beautiful necklace as opposed to from time to time having a great experience.
Look, I'm going to be 68 in February, and Ariel's 50, right? And we still have a passionately romantic life. You know, a lot of people, they hit 50, they're done.
Or 40, or 30, or a couple of years together,
they lose the purpose of the relationship, and they just kind of separate.
That's true.
Especially if they don't...
Well, you guys have been, I mean, you guys are an amazing couple, and I appreciated, the book, and I look forward to reading the next book on relationships. Obviously, when I'm sitting here with my dog Jake, I'm hoping that one day I will meet my Ariel, or I will meet my significant other, and I'll be able to do the same sort of thing. Because honestly, you know, I do assemblies for elementary schools, and one of the things you were talking about earlier about listening, I used to get into the whole thing about like really preparing so that I'd have something to say, and I'd go in there and I'd have this meaningful thing. And what's happened recently has been I've been taking the mic around to the kids, and I've been asking them questions, and when I'm just there listening to them and talking about what they talk about and what they want to, you know, information on, my assemblies transform. They become informational resources based on exactly what the kids are thinking about, and you talked about that with listening. And,
that sounds great.
I appreciate what you guys are doing. Can you give, and again, I know that the books are fantastic and everything else, some other tips for our listeners about ways that they can... kind of get into this, looking at a new year and opportunity to get into these,
You ask us that, and we both came up with the same thing at the same time. I'm now sitting on a desk at one end of the office, and Ariel's at the other, and we both looked at each other and mouthed the words, "Be kind to yourself."
Right.
Most of us are so hard on ourselves, we don't realize that our lives are predetermined until we become aware of the mechanical nature of life. You see, until you become aware of those things that control your life, you don't have control over your life. That comes out of being kind to yourself. Because you can't be kinder to somebody else than you are to yourself. So if you think
I appreciate what you're saying. I mean, what do you say to the person out there that's dealing with an addiction issue though? When you get to that level of self-absorption, and I work in that all the time, and you know, I think it's an over-analyzed thing. What do you say to somebody like that? Because, you know, being kind to yourself when you've got, obviously, some pretty significant debts out there that need to be taken care of, what do you say to somebody in that situation?
Well, I was just speaking with one of our clients, Christina, today about it, and another lady had written in to us via our website, you know, transformationmadeeasy.com. It's an easy way to reach us. She was asking us about addictions and food and being overweight. And one of the things that happened for our this lovely lady, Christina, is she's not only overweight but had increasing debt. And it really was two things. When she'd be hard on herself, she'd go for the comfort food, or she would go for to buy that thing. That was her version to compensate for being hard on herself. There were a couple things that she did. One is she started being kinder to herself. And the second is, and this is really key for transformation, and it does make it easy, that is that you start to tell the truth. When you are honest with yourself, we spoke to another fellow this week because we went to consult his at this office, and this fellow is addicted to
the internet.
The internet, surfing the web, and it's a challenge because it's an internet company. So we went there, and his bosses are very firmly rooted in instantaneous transformation. They all have an interest in it. They've been seeing him flip around to websites. And we talked to him about it. And the first was, it was not to make him wrong. It was a non-judgmental conversation. He was honest about it. So we told him, let's play a game. All we want you to do is this. When you have the impulse to go flip to a website, we're not telling you don't go. We just say, write it down. Just write down the time. And if you have to go, write down the duration that you're gone. And then right when you come back to your work. He got so excited. He called us the next day. He called us at home. He called us. He was so excited because the first day, in the first 3 hours, he went to go to the web 7 different times. And then the next day, it was 7 times over the entire day. And we haven't spoken to him in a few days. But he was shocked to discover how often he had the impulse to go. But simple, non-judgmental seeing was enough to facilitate.
Complete it so that he's hardly even pulled to go to the web anymore. He's now able to work when he goes to work rather than be distracted by his life.
And by the way, Christina's losing weight. And part of it was she started to tell herself the truth about how much she ate and what she ate instead of hiding it from herself. Oh, I can binge here. It doesn't matter. It wasn't true. She started being honest.
Well, the other thing is with Christina, she was very much in debt, a great deal of money, and she is now paying down her debt.
Aggressively.
Aggressively, and it is making a substantial debt in her
debt. In her debt.
Debt
but, you know, but you know what's neat? What's particularly neat about it is to watch her come alive. This is not this painful process. What we had her do was be able to tell us at any given time, if you can tell us to the penny, or at least to the dollar, how much debt you have on your credit cards, we'll have one here. And once she was able to know exactly to the dollar, any time we ask her how much she owed, that interest and that interest in not putting more on it reversed the cycle. With each person, it's very different. But instantaneous transformation is a technology.
It's a skill set that can be learned, and you get better at it. And pretty soon, you don't even realize that you have anything to do with it, but your life starts showing up like a miracle, like easy.
What?
Like you don't get upset.
I think the idea that keeps coming through to me, too, is that there is a lot of self-hatred out there. I mean, I think there are a lot of people that are judging themselves, and whether it's food addictions or alcohol addictions or drug addictions or whatever it is, they're beating themselves up about stuff that happened in the past and that just needs to be, you know, let go of. And I think, you know, the self-hatred and a lot of that stuff is, you know, it's critical, and it's beautiful
well,
that you guys are doing this, and I appreciate you coming on my show so very much.
So do we. We appreciate your having us. You know, working on yourself doesn't work is a schematic, a text, if you will, that lets people discover how to get back control of their own lives.
Start to like it again.
Say it again?
Start to like it again. You know, start to
right.
enjoy it and to have that kind of that freedom of being a child and not be so judgmental and all those things. I mean, to start to really enjoy the experience of being alive. And it doesn't matter if you got money or fame or whatever it happens to be. You know, it's a matter of actually living from a moment to moment in your own shoes and appreciating the fact that you're here. I don't even know if appreciation is the wrong word. It's just being there with whatever happens and being willing to accept it and embrace it and say yes. And, you know, I think you guys are on the forefront of introducing that to people. And like I said, thank you so much. I mean, we got about 1 minute left. I appreciate you guys fighting through the technical difficulties and talking to me, and I very much look forward to getting the second book on relationships. Can you remind our listeners where to go if they want more information?
Our website's easy, transformationmadeeasy.com. Real easy.
And Rusty, thank you so much for having us. It was a pleasure.
And we look forward to speaking to you again, and we really appreciate the great work you're doing. Keep going, man.
Yeah.
You guys have a good evening. And to
thank
all you,
you
out there that listen to... To all of you out there that listened to us tonight, thank you so much. And if you liked what you heard, tell a friend, because that's the only way that we're going to get more people involved in this process. And we're going to take you out listening to The Cure, just like heaven.
We've come to the end of another hour here at The Conscious Communicator, and I can't thank you enough for joining me on this journey. Your phone calls and emails are greatly appreciated. And if you like what we're doing, please invite a friend to join us. This is a conversation that needs many voices, and as we open up the possibility of conscious communication to more and more people, the results will be a freeing of the true self from the burdensome armor of ego, and a flowering of the potential that is available to all of us. Until next time, peace out, travelers. The rest is still unwritten.